If I had to do one prediction for this decade that is just ahead of us, I would say the things that we've seen during the last decade, which was the democratization of the equity markets to the likes of Robinhood, Revolut, Betterment, Chairsies, and so on. There's so many examples out there. I would say that the decade of 2020s was going to be the democratization of the debt market. And that's going to be much more powerful because the debt market is hundreds of trillions of dollars more important than the equity market.
That was the voice of Will Remore, my special guest today. And if that sounds intriguing, you should definitely keep listening. Will's well known in the blockchain community here in New Zealand. And after spending a bit of time in banking, these days he's actively involved with projects like MakerDAO. Today, welcome to part two in Democratizing Debt. Now, I truly believe, based on my understanding so far, that decentralized financial systems and all that comes with it will change everything in the mainstream world of finance. Banking, insurance, borrowing and lending, investment platforms, fund managers, and financial advisors will either be moved by it or it will move right past us. Now, being a slow learner myself, I don't fully understand what we're actually talking about today, I have to be honest. I've listened a couple times already to this episode, and I may just hit it one more time for good measure afterwards. And I'd suggest that you do the same if it initially feels a little bit over your head, too. Now, what I absolutely do know about this space so far is that there is a lot of smart people here, mostly working for a sense of purpose rather than chasing job titles or building a brand. These people are willing to take risks, to innovate, to build, and to try things out, to collaborate, and to share. That will result in something at some stage. So if you work in financial services or you're in fintech, I'd encourage you to think really big here. There's so much opportunity for those willing to bust out of their silos and democratize innovation. We're talking about democratizing debt today, though. So what does that mean? Well, it means that soon, you and I may have more options when it comes to how we invest, who facilitates it, and what we invest in. Last week, just as a reminder, Will and I covered the following 4 points. Balance sheet basics, balance sheet for financial services, the 101 on lending, how does it work from a bank's perspective, and how banks can use this thing called securitization to help fund their lending activities. This week, we're completing the conversation by covering 2 more things, and bear with me, it might sound a little bit technical, but next one is how to bring debt securitization on-chain via non-fungible tokens, and then how DeFi or decentralized finance creates additional sources of liquidity, which diversifies the funding base and reduces systemic liquidity risk. Now, that may sound like a bunch of gibberish for some of you right now, and apologies if this goes over your head today, but hang in there if you can and listen twice if you need to. It's totally worth it. In the world of decentralized finance, where we're all stakeholders in new forms of wealth, non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, are more than just JPEGs and digital clothing for avatars. It's yet another tool from the future, I think, that may help bring more of the world of investing to more everyday people. Hope you enjoy this one today. Let's get started. Welcome to the latest edition of the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. In this podcast, I cover a wide range of topics ranging from property investment, investing in managed funds and KiwiSaver, precious metals and digital assets like Bitcoin. Why do I do it? Because I love learning and helping everyday Kiwis build new wealth for the new world that we're heading into. I'm Darcy Angaro, your host and qualified financial advisor. My goal is to get self-directed DIY investors thinking about all the tools available to build wealth. While I hope this will assist you in making more informed financial decisions, please do keep in mind that nothing you hear today is considered financial advice. Investments or strategies discussed may not be suitable for everyone, so be sure to do your own research before acting on anything discussed today. Further information on today's show can be found by tapping or swiping over the cover art in your podcast player. Here you'll find some show notes, which will contain all relevant links relating to today's topic. Hope you enjoy the show. Kind of impossible to really go straight to this part of the conversation without covering off what we already did. But recently dipped my toes in the water on the podcast and we covered non-fungible tokens, NFTs. And we looked at that kind of from the art and the collectibles space. And I think for a lot of people, they kind of look at that and think, well, now I know what it is. That's all it is. We just have a bit of a play around with NFTs and sweet, that's all there is to it. But there is so much more to all of these digital assets. All of these pieces of the puzzle actually play an interesting part. How do we bring this whole concept of securitization and NFTs together? Like, if we were to kind of talk about NFTs, we kind of think JPEGs. And if we talk about mortgages, we talk about home loan repayments and interest rates. How the heck are those two things connected?
The clear link here is actually this idea of the securitization, right? When you essentially were taking like the asset, which is a loan in a bank, it's a single line. It's like, that's where like it's a facility, right? So it's a single line of an asset in a bank. So the bank already does that by putting actually that loan, pledging it to that vehicle or selling it to that intermediary vehicle that we talked about, the special purpose vehicle, and then actually issue those notes that represent the cash flow, the underlying cash flow of those assets into the market. Where NFTs actually come is that NFTs have a similar characteristics to a securitization flow, because NFTs are also non-fungible assets, so that they cannot be broken down, essentially. So they are kind of like the comparable to other crypto assets. And essentially, if you replace the fact that you're taking that loan off that balance sheet of the bank, putting into that securitization vehicle and issuing a note, what if you can actually take the assets that represents that loan and actually tokenize it in a way that there is a one-to-one relationship between the underlying asset, the loan, and the NFT, so you tokenize actually the asset itself, and then you use a combination of those assets to issue a bond note into the market so that investors can go and buy that bond note against the cash flow. Essentially, it's just a way of transforming an existing security into a token.
Just make sure we break this down, because this is like normally with the process of securitization, correct me if I'm wrong, Will, but it's more or less, I'm sure there's layers to it, but it's more or less, it's fungible, right? It's all the same. It's all kind of packaged up and it's just homogenized. But with using NFTs, non-fungible tokens, then it's not broken down and pooled together and kind of just manipulated and stuff like that. I guess there's a direct link to the underlying asset which secures the loan, and that turns into a token itself. Am I correct so far?
That's right. And then the only thing that you then do when you sell to investors is actually that you have packaged up all of those NFTs, which each one of them actually represents a loan with a cash flow. That representation of that cash flow is what you then actually you can sell onto the marketplace. In securitization, you also have this concept of tranches, right? A simple securitization is just composed of subordinated tranche or equity tranche and a debt tranche, which is essentially like a junior and senior, right? The investor then, depending on its risk appetite, knowing that there is this cash flow that is being generated from that securitization vehicle, they can say, okay, I want to be a senior investor because I'm more conservative. I just want the guarantee of cash flow. I don't want to take equity risk on this one. And another investor says, hey, I don't mind so much about having a little bit of higher risk. And I go in and buy myself the equity piece of that securitization. So actually you will buy a bond tranche that essentially is representative of the equity. And we will have, of course, a higher return against that risk that they're getting to the market. But okay. The idea of the NFT being linked to each of the underlying loans is just a minimum but important actually novelty, because it's a very useful use case for actually for NFTs.
It allows, I'm guessing just from an investor's perspective, it allows for precision when it comes to assessing the risk and return, right? Because it's hard, I would imagine it would be hard to see it within the tranches of these securitized loans. It would be hard to kind of pick it apart and assess it correctly. But with non-fungible tokens, you can see everything far more clearly, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that actually bond markets, even for institutions, have struggled the most over the last 30 years or so is actually with transparency of the valuations that actually are done on those bond markets, but also with common data frameworks, right? So if you look into the bond market in the US, it's way more developed than the bond market in Europe. And a lot of that is based on the fact that in the US, they have created common frameworks and formats for how bonds are traded, right? Especially in the public markets. Whereas actually in Europe, they don't have that clear framework as well defined. So that creates a lot of, missed opportunity for fixed income investors, because if they don't trust the underlying information and if they don't trust the valuations of those bonds, they feel kind of wary of investing into the fixed income bond market in Europe. So they will go and they will invest rather than in the US. What if you could actually have a more common layer of information that is pretty much real time of those bond markets, and then be able to provide much more transparency to investors? And that's actually essentially the use case of having that common distributed ledger technology, providing that common understanding.
Okay. Like there's all sorts of stuff that will come off the back of this. And is there a process happening where NFTs are being minted from these securitized loans? Is there something like actually that's happening right now? Or is this a hypothetical thing that we're talking about?
It's not a hypothetical. This is being... So trials using distributed ledger technology for the bond markets have been going on for quite a few years, since 2017 or roundabouts. And actually, this is a big credit actually to the Australian New Zealand banks. So the CBA, the Commonwealth Bank, which is the parent of ASB here in New Zealand, was the first one to issue a bond on the blockchain back in 2018. So it's already been a few years, but it was actually experimentation stage, right? And right now that market has evolved quite a bit. And the advent actually of NFTs has just speeded up, because it is very clear the use case for those banks across the world of what is it that can be done. So now they are moving up from just a single issuance experimentation into, can I actually do that at a certain level of scale? And MakerDAO, right now we're currently going through a implementation of a first bond facility. There's a covered bond facility, so those on-chain assets exist. And then with SocGen, so Societe Generale, which is one of the biggest French banks. But many more other use cases are already in the pipeline for the coming year. So in like banks that have been playing with the fintech world, kind of on the listening side of what fintech is evolving in, and blockchain is a component of that, they've been actually really forthcoming from their innovation labs.
Interesting. Mainstream banks are actively investigating this, or are they've experimented a little bit and now they're just kind of watching to see what naturally happens out there in the wild, and then they'll kind of make it their own? What how do you think this is going to evolve from here? Are they going to keep on being pioneers, or take a back seat and just watch and see others fail first?
So there is a mix. There is a mix. There are those that actually are being very, very proactive. And that means that those that actually being very proactive now in 2021 is because they have been testing it, those technologies, for the last 3-4 years, right? So they have done issuances of bonds on the blockchain to test it out, whether they actually work for them and actually has some alignment with risk appetite of their shareholders and so on. And the ones that actually have done enough of that, now they are looking towards, okay, I understand Bitcoin and I understand Ethereum, and now I want to go a little bit further. Is that something else that I can do with these layer of open finance, let's say, like that, not used to the term decentralized finance, the aspect of like next stage of experimentation. But the build out to arrive to this stage has really been going on for quite a few years.
That's fascinating. And I want to bring this back to the everyday investor in a second, but before we go there, we can kind of see from an investor's perspective, like institutional investors, how this whole thing can really help, but also in terms of diversifying the funding base for lenders, for banks. What's the reason why that's important? Like, why is it important that these retail banks are diversifying their funding base? What's the actual purpose of that?
One of the key fears, let's say like this, of any bank, and we've seen this during the last two market recessions, right? Is like GFC and COVID last year. The thing that banks and central banks are the most afraid of is of a drought of liquidity in the markets. And we talk, if you listen to any, you know, Financial Times economist or anything like this around those times, the thing that you're probably the word that is going to be, you're going to be reading, you're going to be listening the most is, or reading, liquidity. Is there enough liquidity for the banking system to carry on, you know, lending or so on? Or are they going to actually kind of like close the taps in a downturn when business and individuals need the most that credit? So that's the background to that story. So that means from a treasury perspective, like so within the bank, they need to manage the liquidity, right, in the marketplace. And they need to manage not only the liquidity that they have, we've talked about the different like maturities of liquidity that they have, the different sources of liquidity, but also to be able to deploy that at a very short term. What this new stage of experimentation allow them is actually to further diversify their sources of liquidity. So they had the customer deposits, they had the traditional bond issuance through the wholesale markets, they have the central bank, and what DeFi and open finance is actually allowing them is to have another source of liquidity that they can pull on. And because it's on the blockchain, once it's deployed, actually the ramping up of liquidity can be very quick. It's essentially a deployment on a smart contract, and all of a sudden you have like a full liquidity facility that is available for a commercial bank, for example.
Right. So another form of, or it's diversifying a source of funding, which really helps when there's more pressure or if there's some sort of crisis that might happen, right?
Essentially, yes. And we know that we've just gone through a recession. So, you know, all of these lenders, they have significant amount of history to stress test what happens with liquidity when the market is going through a recession. So having an additional source that they can draw from that essentially just allows them to have a further mitigant to those liquidity risks.
I guess where this is all going, Will, and this is why I'm really keen to talk about this. Some people might be listening and thinking, well, what has this got to do with me? What has this got to do with building wealth? Well, I've been talking on the podcast now for a couple of years now, I guess, talking about blockchain technology, specifically digital assets, now NFTs and decentralized finance. And some might think that's for those people to get involved in, and it's rat poison. I'm going to stay away from it because I know that regulators will clamp down on it and they'll outlaw it because maybe it's too good and it threatens their position of authority. But we know that, you know, even Reserve Bank of New Zealand, they want to make sure that there's stability in the financial system. So more financial stability is actually created through adopting this stuff. So when people kind of think, hey, it's going to be regulated away and therefore I'm not going to get involved in it, well, have a look at this. You know, this is actually a really good case study here on how it can reinforce the traditional banking system and make it even better. Is that the way that you see it as well? That, hey, this is actually a sign of what's to come and it's confirmation that regulators are not necessarily going to be squashing it away?
I believe so, because I mean, it's in the interest as well of the regulator that those banks actually have a diversified pool of funding, right? Which actually reduces their stress during moments of stress. So having an alternative to that, which it's an additional, it's not replacing, it's just an additional source of funds. It's actually beneficial to everybody. And I would actually even take that one step further. We've talked about, you know, transparency in those markets. We talked about this diversity of funding issue, but actually a further thing I think this is actually just the next stage of the development of debt markets, right? Is that you and me and every investor out there has got used to invest and manage equity pretty easily now. We have like several options out there here in New Zealand. We have like, you know, we have Chairsies and have InvestNow and have all the different platforms where you can manage essentially, you know, mostly equity, right? But the majority of investors, and just from an investor responsibility point of view, they don't manage fixed income. They delegate the management of that fixed income to their KiwiSaver providers, right? And if you think about it, how many of us really understand what is it that we are really investing through those KiwiSaver providers? I would say pretty much no one. Ask your KiwiSaver provider, right? So by adding the fact that you're opening up that market where it was essentially an institutional-only market up until this point, you're opening up a whole range of not only liquidity, but potentially like on a secondary debt market, an opportunity for even retail investors to be much more knowledgeable about investing in debt than they are right now. Both the fixed income and the equity side, they essentially they can build a pretty solid portfolio. And in many of those securitization structures, you can get way more solid return for significantly less risk than the majority of the investors.
And this is just another example of how when we go into decentralized finance, where we're actually interacting in this digital layer, it's just another sign, another bit of evidence that points to the fact that you can actually start to build wealth from an infinite pool. Because as soon as you get into that digital realm, time doesn't apply. Like, opportunities open up so much. And like you say, we don't really know what we're doing when we're putting money into our KiwiSaver, and we don't really know what's happening around the debt part of that, the fixed income part of the component of our KiwiSaver plan. But if we now potentially have an opportunity to directly engage with fixed interest through some mechanism like what we've described today, then you're going to get better rates of return, much more transparency in terms of how you can diversify things yourself. And ultimately, you're providing a solution to solving the systemic liquidity risk that exists in the financial system. So it's got to be a win-win-win, right?
Absolutely. And I think if I had to do one prediction for this decade that is just ahead of us, I would say the things that we've seen during the last decade, which was the democratization of the equity market to the likes of Robinhood, Revolut, Betterment, Chairsies, and so on. There's so many examples out there. I would say that the decade of 2020s is going to be the democratization of the debt market. And that's going to be much more powerful because the debt market is hundreds of trillions of dollars more important than the equity market.
Wow. Okay. I feel like we're just getting started. We should have another hour session here. But we're going to have to wrap this up here. But do you want to just talk a little bit about MakerDAO and kind of the work that you're involved in right now before we finish up?
Yeah, sure. So at MakerDAO, I'm currently leading a team of risk professionals that are essentially looking after the real world assets and the real world assets actually function of the project. So MakerDAO is an open source project that is essentially managed by community of people like myself, and essentially its main product, if you will, into the marketplace is the issuance of a decentralized stable coin that is pegged to the US dollar. There's much more detail behind the scenes, and I think that, as you're saying, it's don't have the time today to cover it, but would love to have the opportunity in a future moment to cover that in more detail.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I really, really appreciate your time coming on the show today, Will. And I think I can hear the faint cries of children that probably want to play with you now that it's Friday afternoon on a very long week. So I'll let you go, and we'll catch you again soon, hopefully, and we'll talk a little bit more about MakerDAO. Sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to it.
Good man. All right. Thank you again.
Yes.
Thanks for listening into the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast, a show that's about helping you, the everyday Kiwi, build wealth. To learn more about the show, please visit nzeverydayinvestor.com or visit your show notes on your podcast player. There, you can find out how to make contact, sign up to our free newsletter, and check out previous episodes. The mission of the NZ Everyday Investor is to help increase wealth for the everyday Kiwi. If you'd like to support this effort, then there's a few things you can do. Write a review, comment on social media, or support the show on Patreon and subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Before we finish up, just another reminder that what was discussed today is for educational purposes only. Ideally, before acting on anything covered here, please contact your trusted financial advisor and do your own research. Catch you next time.